This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. There are a few subjects more frequently debated as how to best educate the nation's children. And like most touchy issues, few people agree on precisely how to fix America's public schools. Common Core curricula, charter schools, privatization, fresh leadership, and busting teacher unions are among the cures being proposed in failing school systems. Union City, New Jersey has become a model district by avoiding quick turnaround or magic wand approaches. David L. Kerp is professor of public policy at the University of California, Berkeley, and author of 18 books on education and urban issues. His latest is Improbable Scholars, The Rebirth of a Great American School System and a Strategy for America's Schools. David, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
So your book describes the labor-intensive process in Union City to rebuild its school system. First, describe Union City. Give us a little on the demographics and economics and why you chose that district.
Union City is the most unlikely place to be talking about education reform. It's 4 miles away from Times Square, just on the other side of the Hudson. But it might as well be a light year away. It's the most crowded city in the country. It is an almost entirely immigrant city. Maybe a quarter or a third of the population is undocumented. They come from all across Latin America. And it's a community that was doing so badly by its kids that a quarter century ago, it was right on the verge of being taken over by the state.
So what did the school system look like when you first encountered it?
I came upon the school system because I was really excited about, and still am excited about, the power and potential of early education. And Union City had developed an amazing marquee early education program, and I loved it. And I knew that by now, this is 4 years ago, that district was doing really well, and I wanted to visit classrooms, so I did. And I looked at classrooms from kindergarten through eighth grade where the kids were doing really surprisingly well, and I was seeing great teaching. I wasn't seeing any of the kind of phoned-in sort of teaching, bad teaching, lazy teaching that we hear so much about. I was hearing really exciting teaching. So I wanted to go spend a year there and understand how a place could go from worst to essentially first in urban education.
Well, you do spend a lot of time inside the classroom in this book, especially in a third grade classroom where you were known as Mr. David. Tell us about that experience.
In order to understand what had happened in Union City, I wanted to hang out in a third grade classroom because it's the year of the first high stakes test, No Child Left Behind. And I wanted to hang out in a classroom that had a lot of immigrant kids because this is a district that really worked hard at figuring out ways of giving those students strength both in their home language and in English. So I became, as you say, Mr. David in this amazing class of third graders. And that was just sort of the first level cut. It's the where the rubber meets the road part of the story, because I went all the way up the ladder to talking about what was happening in the state government in Washington. But the key point, the fulcrum, where it's all about, is that intersection between the inspiring teacher of a really good curriculum and the engaged student. And there I was, right in the middle of it.
Well, let's look at the curriculum that was embraced by the district, which was a sort of back-to-basics curriculum. So give us some examples from the classroom of what back-to-basics looks like.
The trouble with the term back-to-basics is that it carries a connotation of rote memorization and drill and skill and all that stuff. And it's not that. It really is a curriculum premised on the fact that these youngsters are growing up in families that don't have time to read to them. The parents themselves, many of them have had only a few years of education. They're not really fully literate in their home language. So it's a curriculum that starts by soaking kids in that home language and then transitioning to English. And it's a very word-soaked curriculum. It's a very literature-soaked curriculum. If you walk into those schools, you'll see the students writing something every day. And not just running some mundane, you know, here's the exercise thing, but something out of their own lives and something that gets connected to the science or the social studies or the history or the math or whatever else they're working on. Math came later, and the math instruction, I would say, is not very different from what kids in most New Hampshire elementary schools would be getting. The language instruction, the reading and writing instruction, that's really, truly special and really crucially important. There's a great study that shows that poor kids come to 4 years old, they've heard 30 million fewer words than kids from professional families. Mm. That's a huge gap, and that's the kind of gap that Union City is trying to close with the way it teaches reading and writing.
You talked a little bit about the limitations that some parents bring in terms of language and culture, but the local roots of the stakeholders in this process, the teachers and the administrators, play a significant role in the success of Union City's turnaround.
This is one of those school districts that has no Teach for America teachers and no charter schools. Not that there aren't good Teach for America teachers, not that there aren't good charter schools, but it's very much a school system that's rooted in hometown community values. Many, many of the teachers and administrators never lived farther than 50 miles from Union City in their lives. And that gives them a very personal stake in these kids. So when they say these are our kids, they mean it in an almost literal sense. It also makes it easier for them to connect to families. And that's very much a crucial part of the story. There's a lot of reaching out to engage families, to get families to appreciate that education is not just the school's job, that the parents have to be committed to the process as well, and a lot of efforts to teach the parents how to teach their kids. And that's just vital.
Given that, then, what do you think are the prospects for a strategy that a number of schools have picked up of taking, you know, the turnaround agent brought in to fix an ailing school, you know, the sort of celebrity superintendents and no excuses reformers?
That model, there's nothing out there that suggests it works. If you look, for example, at this phenomenon called turnaround schools, you close a school, you get rid of all the folks who are there, you bring in a new batch of folks, you open the school up again, and lo and behold, you haven't solved anything. Celebrity superintendents come and go, and the biggest celebrity of them all, Michelle Rhee, really left Washington, D.C. schools in many ways worse off than before, and particularly the poorest kids in the district are actually doing less well than they had when she arrived. And many teachers had come and gone. Principals that she brought in had come and gone. And any place that I know, I'm taking Newark, New Jersey, just a few miles away from Union City, The same kind of process went on. What Union City has shown, to borrow the old line from Aesop's fable, and sometimes the tortoise does beat the hare. Sometimes slow, steady, continuous, patient work to build a strong system of supports for kids from preschool to high school. That's a model that we know from business, and it's a model that works in schools as well.
David Kerp is with us. He's the author of Improbable Scholars, among many other books. It's a new book about the rebirth of a failing public school system in Union City, New Jersey. As we know, in a lot of school systems, there isn't a lot of patience for slow and steady. Do New Jersey schools have policies that other states don't have in terms of educational requirements that create a better environment for that slow build?
When I wrote the Union City story, after leaving Union City, I thought, is this just a very special case? Are there other places like this? Or why is it that other districts are able to succeed scattered across the country? Is it because they behave like Union City, or have they really adopted that market-driven turnaround school celebrity model? So I went looking across the country for big, little districts, urban, rural, Latino, poor white, African-American, union, non-union, elected board, appointed board. Didn't matter. I found very much the same template of, again, building a system of supports, taking the time to do so. But the one non-negotiable is patience. And it takes time, and it takes a willingness on the part of parents and local politicians to appreciate that this is not a world of miracle cures. But what's happened in the success places is that the school board, the community, the parents have come to an understanding that they're going to give the new leadership some time. They're going to have benchmarks of success, but they're not going to rush out for the next big thing. And we are, as your question suggests, a really impatient society. But that impatience is more than anything else the enemy of progress in our public schools.
I'm sure a lot of school systems define themselves as terminally unique. They have different problems. How is this scalable? How is the Union City model exportable or scalable to other systems?
So I went to a place in Texas, a city bigger than the size of Boston and Washington, called Aldean, Texas, the poor cousin of Houston, which has done spectacularly well for a student population. It's about 60% Latino and 35% African-American. And I had no idea what I'd find there. And what had been there before was lots of churn. But at some point, the community really sort of looked itself in the mirror and said, we got to stop this. They have had stable leadership. They elected a school board that supports the superintendent. Trust is the key. And trust isn't something that you announce, something you declare. Trust is something that you earn. You earn it slowly and patiently. It requires, obviously, pedagogical skills and leadership skills. It also requires political skills in the best sense. It means that you've got to get parents who are rightly concerned about the lives of their kids as the most important things to them. Get them to understand what's going on and why the system is behaving the way it is. You've got to get teachers who've seen superintendents come and go to accept the notion that they're not under the gun for immediate improvement, that they're going to be trusted as professionals and supported as professionals. And only if they fall down on the job in a major way are they going to be disciplined as opposed to being helped. You've got to do this with all the elements of the community. There is no miracle. And that's really the hard part of this message. The easy part of the message is there's nothing that a place like Union City is doing that any place in the country doesn't know is important. Really good early education, a really word-soaked curriculum, supporting teachers with mentoring and advising and consultants coming in and working in the classrooms, assessing kids and providing targeted help for them. This is just basic stuff to any educator, and it's going to make sense to any parent. That's the good news. The trouble is it doesn't happen overnight, and systems have to, people in communities, have to be willing to do the hard, slow work that it takes to build a really good school system.
David Kerr, professor at the Goldman School of Public Policy at UC Berkeley. He's author of Improbable Scholars, The Rebirth of a Great American School System and a Strategy for America's Schools. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's been a great conversation. Thank you so much.
Now, you can find links to more on the book, including some reviews and articles about the Union City, New Jersey School District. All of that is at wordofmouthradio.org. Coming up, raucous, theatrical, and a whole lot of fun. Vaude and the Villains is a 19-piece orchestra that transports audiences to a New Orleans cabaret show circa 1930. We'll talk with the band's New Hampshire-born leader and his sidekick, Peaches Mahoney, when Word of Mouth continues.